We're thankful to have another opportunity to speak for you tonight, and let's be turning to 2 Corinthians chapter 6. This is really part two of a lesson that we had begun last month, titled, Come Out from Among Them. And if you'll remember, last month we talked about Jehoshaphat and some of the things that Jehoshaphat gave into, even though he was described by the Lord as being a righteous king, just like us. He was subject to different temptations, and one of the things that he fell to was being joined together with unbelievers in a way that the Lord does not want us to be joined. We'll look here in 2 Corinthians 6 to see what the Lord does command us as the church that we need to have in mind concerning our relationship with the ones in the world, the unbelievers, and what we need to keep in mind all the time. In verse 14, there was a problem in the church at Corinth, and so here he's describing the remedy that they needed to follow. And he says here, be not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship hath righteousness with unrighteousness? And what communion hath light with darkness? And what concord hath Christ with Belial? Or what part has he that believeth with an infidel? And what agreement has the temple of God with idols? For ye are the temple of the living God, as God has said, I will dwell in them and walk in them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Wherefore, come out from among them, and be ye separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing. And I will receive you, and will be a father unto you, and ye shall be my sons and daughters, saith the Lord Almighty. So we see the command here in verse 14, to not be unequally yoked or joined together with unbelievers. And we need, this is something that we need to have in mind, because literally every day we are in this world and we are amongst these unbelievers. And of course, the Lord is not telling us don't be amongst those unbelievers. But what is he telling us? He's telling us we don't need to be joined together. We don't need to be unequally yoked together with these unbelievers. They're going in one direction and we need to be going in a different direction. And what's going to happen if we try to be yoked together with someone who's going a completely different direction than the direction that the Lord wants us to be going? And so he tells us not to be yoked together here. And that, as he says in verse 17, that we need to come out from among them and be separate. And we talked last time about this word separate, that it literally is to be set off by a boundary. Now, that's not a physical boundary per se, but we need to recognize it as a boundary, that there is a difference between us as God's people, as a Christian, and the ones in this world, the unbelievers in this world. And we shouldn't be viewing ourselves as all fellow man and the other various ways that people like to describe humanity, and often we hear those kinds of terms used where they're trying to describe us all as humanity together. And we need to recognize, well, we are in a sense, but there's another sense in which we need to be very, very separate and have a boundary, because we are different and we have a different mind and we have a different goal and a different purpose than what 99.9% of the ones in this world have. And of course, we want to encourage those unbelievers to see what the purpose is that God has for us. And we want to encourage them to see that pathway that leads to Him, and to have them be a part of the believers so that we can be yoked together with them. But we need to recognize that distinction and that boundary that needs to be there. And this was one of the common pitfalls that the Israelites fell into throughout the Old Testament. We can see many times where there was a cycle where they would be joined together and influenced by countries that they were neighbors with, and they would begin to follow their practices and how the Lord would bring a punishment upon them, and how the Lord would do that to try to show them and chastise them for the things that they were doing. And one of those times was the time during which Ezra lived. And in Ezra chapter 9, we see some things that Ezra taught to the people here. We'll begin verse 10, Ezra 9 and verse 10. He says, "And now, O our God, what shall we say after this? For we have forsaken thy commandments, which thou hast commanded by thy servants, the prophets, saying, The land unto which you go to possess it is an unclean land, with the filthiness of the people of the lands, with their abominations, which have filled it from one end to another with their uncleanness. Now therefore, give not your daughters unto their sons, neither take their daughters unto your sons, nor seek their peace or their wealth forever, that you may be strong and eat the good of the land and leave it for an inheritance to your children forever." Now, of course, we know that the people did not do this, and that the Lord fulfilled what he said he would do, and he had them carried off captivity by their enemies because they had forsaken him. But the warning that the Lord gave them from the very beginning when they went into those lands was that he reminded them, as we're trying to remind ourselves in this study tonight, that the world is an unclean land, as he describes here in verse 11. This is an unclean land with the filthiness of the people of the lands. And when we look at the different beliefs and practices that are all through this world, what do we see, and what do we wish that we didn't see? It's described perfectly by the passage here, that it is an unclean land with the filthiness of the people of the lands and their abominations. And it's filled from one end to the other. And it seems like when we look at our nation and the world today, that it just seems to be getting worse and worse at the moment. And of course, we all need to be praying that that can turn and turn for the good, and that people will turn to the Lord. But the Lord describes that to them here as the situation, and what he tells them to do is in verse 12, he says, "Don't give your daughters to their sons, nor take their daughters to your sons." And we talked in that first lesson about the word that the Lord uses to describe that is to make affinity, literally to be joined in marriage. And we talked about some examples. We talked about how Solomon made affinity. He married amongst the Egyptians and these other women of these other lands, and of course that turned away his heart. But we also talked about how Jehoshaphat made that mistake. Despite the fact that he was a righteous king and that he loved the Lord, he also fell to a temptation. He was subject to that temptation, and in that particular case he fell to that. And we need to recognize that we all are tempted in the same way that Jehoshaphat was. And we can fall to this temptation in the same way that he did. And that we need to take heed to these commands that we see from the Lord. And so we need to consider the danger of being joined together in these ways. And so that first thing that he mentions here is making affinity or being joined in marriage with the unbelievers. I mean, that is really the ultimate way that one can be unequally yoked together with someone in the world is through that bond of marriage. And it presents great, great problems when that happens. But that's not the only way that ones can be unequally yoked. And that's not the only reason that ones might be unequally yoked and joined together. He mentions two other specific things in this verse 12. He says, "Nor seek their peace or their wealth." And we often see that happen as well, that when someone desires to be at peace with someone else who may not be of the same mind or have the same set of goals, what can be the temptation? Well, the temptation is there to compromise. Is it there to compromise on our principles and to be willing to give in a little bit so that they're not going to view us in a negative way or as an enemy? And that's a common temptation for all of us. And it often happens within our families, doesn't it? That maybe we have some relatives that don't see eye to eye with us on what we believe from the scriptures, and maybe they're not too happy when we begin to speak to them about topics such as baptism and the necessity of baptism and other topics like that. But the question is, are we going to compromise in order to be at peace with those family members? Or are we going to understand, well, they're not believing, and that's a problem, but I've got to hold fast to the principles that the Lord teaches in the Scriptures, and I can't make that compromise. And so we need to be careful about seeking others' peace here, that and falling to that temptation that is there. Now, the last thing he mentions there is don't seek their wealth. And that obviously is a very, very common trap that people fall into, is that they see there's some advantage to be gained by doing certain things and being joined together with certain people. It provides some kind of a material advantage, some type of wealth that might be gained in the process of doing that. And that is another temptation that we need to be aware of and not seeking. So we talked about Jehoshaphat and how he was one of the very, very few righteous kings of Judah. As Brother John has been pointing out in our Sunday morning class, you know, there were, after David and Solomon, there were only four kings out of the 19 who were described as being righteous kings. And Jehoshaphat was one of those. But he, just like us, is subject to these temptations to be joined for these various reasons, to be joined together with these unbelievers. And we studied in that first land how he made that mistake of making marriage with the family of Ahab and some of the problems that led to. And we're going to look at some of the additional problems that led to. You know, unfortunately, sometimes when we fall into a temptation and we make a mistake, it not only has immediate consequences, but there can be consequences that come downstream from that as well, and that can potentially last for a long, long time. And so we need to be looking and learn at these things that we find in the Scriptures and learning from these situations so that we ourselves hopefully will not fall into these same kinds of traps, and that we'll be looking and prepared when the temptation rises, that we'll recognize it and see it for what it is, that it is a temptation and that is something that we need to not fall into. In 2 Chronicles chapter 30, we'll look more here at Jehoshaphat. 2 Chronicles 20, and at this point in time, Ahab has died, and now Ahab's son Ahaziah has taken over as the king in Israel. And so here in verse 35, it says, "And after this did Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, join himself with Ahaziah, king of Israel, who did very wickedly." Just to note some things about Ahaziah, if we hold your place here in 2 Chronicles, but over in 1 Kings 22, in verse 51, it says, "Ahaziah, the son of Ahab, began to reign over Israel in Samaria the 17th year of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah." So for these first 17 years of Jehoshaphat's reign, there was Ahab that was there. And remember, they had joined together. Jehoshaphat's son had married Athaliah, who was the daughter of Ahab. And so that marriage relationship there joined them together, and it led to some very, very poor decisions by Jehoshaphat. But now we see that Ahab has passed on, and now his son Ahaziah is in his place, and he begins in the 17th year of Jehoshaphat. And in verse 52 it says, "And he did evil in the sight of the Lord, and walked in the way of his father, and in the way of his mother, and in the way of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who made Israel to sin." Remember this morning we studied a bit about Jeroboam and how that counsel that Jeroboam took, how it led him to lead the people to sin, and how all of the kings of Israel after him followed in that path of sin. And we often see these statements concerning Jeroboam, where he made Israel to sin, just as it says here in verse 52. Verse 53 says, "For he served Baal and worshipped him and provoked to anger the Lord God of Israel according to all that his father had done." So we see Ahaziah was continuing the very, very bad trend that Jeroboam had started. And that, again, as we remember from our studies on Sunday mornings, that literally all 19 of those kings of Israel were evil. And here's Ahaziah now taking over from his father Ahab and continuing to walk in this evil way. And so Jehoshaphat now is making a second mistake. We studied earlier how Jehoshaphat had joined himself together with Ahab. And now, here in verse 35 of 2 Chronicles 20, we're seeing that he joins himself with Ahaziah, king of Judah. But what continues to be the problem here, even after Ahab is gone? Well, Jehoshaphat had given his son in marriage to the daughter of Ahab, and that situation is still very much there. There's still very much that temptation to, when you're joined together and you have family, there's that temptation to keep that peace and to do the things that will be joined with them. And that's exactly what happened here. As we continue in 2 Chronicles 20, we look in verse 36 and it says, "And he joined himself with him to make ships to go to Tarshish. And they made the ships in Ezion-Geber." So one of the particular works that he joined himself with Ahaziah here was to build these ships, these together with the king of Israel. And in verse 37, it says, "Then Eliezer, the son of Dodavah of Mareshah, prophesied against Jehoshaphat, saying, 'Because thou hast joined thyself with Ahaziah, the Lord has broken thy works.' And the ships were broken that they were not able to go to Tarshish." So we see here that this not small work, consider the amount of work that it was to join together to build these ships. I mean, that would have been one of the reasons that they joined together, was because it required a great deal of effort to do this. But what did the Lord think about that work that and what Jehoshaphat was doing here and who he was joining himself together with? Did the Lord bless this work that Jehoshaphat was getting involved with? You know, we see that those ships were broken. They were literally built and then destroyed. And what message would that have sent to Jehoshaphat here? It's interesting to note in 1 Kings 22, and again, keep your place here in 2 Chronicles, Lord willing, we'll come back to that. But in 1 Kings 22, we get a couple more details here about this situation with these ships. In verse 48, it says, "Jehoshaphat made ships of Tarshish to go to Ophir for gold." So the purpose for making these ships was what? Well, it kind of goes back to that third reason that we read about in Ezra. Why do people become yoked together with unbelievers? Well, sometimes it's to seek their wealth. And here there was an opportunity to build these ships, to go send them to Ophir, to go and to get gold. And that seems to have been a part of this particular temptation as well. But in verse 48 it says, "But they went not, for the ships were broken at Ezion-Geber." Now, in the 1 Kings passage here, doesn't really know why they were broken, but what we read earlier in Chronicles says, well, they were broken because the Lord was involved here and he was not pleased with this work that Jehoshaphat had joined himself to do. In verse 49 here, in 1 Kings 22, it says, "Then said Ahaziah, the son of Ahab, unto Jehoshaphat, 'Let my servants go with thy servants in the ships.' But Jehoshaphat would not." So Jehoshaphat began to realize here that, well, he had been warned. And he appears to have taken heed to these words of Eliezer about not being joined together. And so when it came time for the servants of Jehoshaphat to get on those ships and to join together with Ahaziah, we see that Jehoshaphat is seeing here, well, I better not do this. And so his servants did not go. He did not send those servants. We might remember that previously when Micaiah came and warned Jehoshaphat about not going to battle against Ramoth-Gilead with Ahab, that Jehoshaphat did not pay attention to those words of Micaiah. And he was very, very strongly rebuked when he returned from that battle. But we see some change here. We do see some things that Jehoshaphat is learning through these things, that he is taking heed to the prophets here that the Lord is sending to warn him about these things. But nevertheless, what happened to these works that he had spent quite a bit of effort in doing with these unbelievers? We see the Lord destroyed those works. And we'll see later in the New Testament that we need to be paying attention to the works that we are doing and realizing that the Lord is going to be testing our works as well. And we need to be very careful about the works that we choose to do and with whom we are doing those works. In 2 Kings chapter 3, now we're going to see Jehoram making this mistake yet again, because the situation continues to be here where there is this affinity between the houses of Jehoshaphat and the house of Ahab. In 2 Kings chapter 3, we'll begin in verse 1 here. It says, "Now Jehoram, the son of Ahab, began to reign over Israel the 18th year of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah." So Ahaziah was only king for 2 years before Jehoram now takes over in Israel. So here's the next line in the line of the Israelite kings that Jehoshaphat is dealing with. And so he begins in the 18th year of Jehoshaphat. Jehoram reigns, it says here, for 12 years. In verse 2, what kind of a person does it show us that Jehoram was? Well, it says here, he wrought evil in the sight of the Lord, but not like his father and like his mother. For he put away the image of Baal that his father had made. Nevertheless, he cleaved unto the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, which made Israel to sin. He departed not therefrom. And Mesha, king of Moab, was a sheepmaster and rendered unto the king of Israel 100,000 lambs and 100,000 rams with the wool. But it came to pass when Ahab was dead that the king of Moab rebelled against the king of Israel. So note here what it says about Jehoram. Was Jehoram like Ahaziah? Was Jehoram like Ahab? Well, to a degree he was, but it says, because it says here, he wrought evil in the sight of the Lord. And verse 3 again reiterates, he cleaved to these sins of Jeroboam, that those things that Jeroboam had set in motion that had been carried through all of this time and all of these kings. Jehoram continues to participate in those things, but it wasn't to the degree of his father. And it says there he actually put away the image of Baal that his father had made. So he was evil, but it was to a lesser extent than his father and Ahab. And we see the situation here now that the king of Moab is rebelling against Israel. And so this leads Jehoram to make a request of Jehoshaphat. We can all guess what this request is going to be. Picking up in verse 6, it says, "King Jehoram went out of Samaria at the same time and numbered all Israel. And he went and sent to Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, saying, The king of Moab has rebelled against me. Will thou go with me against Moab to battle? And he said, I will go up. I am as thou art, my people as thy people, and my horses as thy horses." You know, does this sound eerily familiar to the answer that he had given previously to Ahab, where Ahab was requesting him to go up to Ramoth-Gilead? And he said, I am as you are, and my people as your people. And this is exactly the same answer that Jehoshaphat is giving to Jehoram. And we again wonder why is he doing this? Why is he not learning from these things that he has already gone through with joining together with Ahab, joining together with Ahaziah, and now the request is coming up to be joined together with Jehoram, and he provides the very same answer that he had given before. Well, we need to all be reminded that it's easy to look at others and see how easy it would have been for them to do the right thing and how they shouldn't have done that. But what about us? You know, Jehoshaphat continued to be joined together in affinity, and as we pointed out earlier, you know, we make a bad choice. It doesn't necessarily, the consequences for that bad choice don't necessarily stop in that immediate time. And as we're seeing here, these consequences are continuing to provide more and more temptations, both through Ahaziah and now through Jehoram. And Jehoshaphat is continuing to yield to this pressure that he's getting through these relationships with these ones of the house of Israel. One of the other things that we might note here is we're asking that question to ourselves, why would he again choose to be joined together? Well, keep in mind what we read earlier there about what it said of Jehoram. He had put away that image of Baal that his father had made. So perhaps Jehoshaphat was seeing that there were some things that Jehoram was doing that gave some indications that he wasn't the same as Ahaziah, that he wasn't the same as Ahab. And maybe that was also a factor that Jehoshaphat was considering here, that, well, maybe it's okay this time to decide to be joined together because he's not like Ahab was. And, you know, we can justify and rationalize these things like that as well. And we always need to have in mind, well, what is the standard that we need to be using when we're considering these things? And is it wise for us to be comparing one person or one situation to another situation? Is that wise for us to do that? Well, that wouldn't have been a wise thing to do here because, as the Lord said, well, Jehoram was still very evil and considered by the Lord to be a wicked person. So that despite the fact that maybe he wasn't as bad as Ahaziah or Ahab, the Lord still saw him as being wicked. And we need to make sure that our judgment is based on the Lord's word and his judgment, and that we're not using these kinds of comparisons. And we can fall into that trap just as Jehoshaphat did here. You know, we often have situations where maybe we have a friend or a co-worker who is part of a denominational religion. And what's the temptation there to fall to? Well, you know, there's a lot of temptation that could come up, particularly if it's someone that you like. We see this happen quite a bit with men and women and you know, liking each other. It's a very, very big temptation, and it's one that we need to be on guard for because, you know, it's very easy for us to let our emotions take over, and, you know, we set aside these things that we're studying as we are now, where we understand, well, our measure of judgment needs to be based on God's words, not some relative thing. You know, this person that we have met, they might be friendly and outgoing, and they might appear to have a lot of things about them that appear to be right. But we need to be using God's word as the standard and recognizing and seeing them clearly for what they are. And that's a very, very difficult thing when someone is caught up with their emotions and being attached to someone. But we need to remember the warning that Jesus gives us in Matthew chapter 7 concerning false prophets. In verse 15, he says, "Beware of false prophets which come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravening wolves." So here's a situation where on the outside they look to be very good, but yet that's not truly the case. Inside, he says, they're ravening wolves. Well, how does Jesus teach us to solve and deal with this and deal with this problem? In verse 16, he says, "You shall know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes of thorns or figs of thistles? Even so, every good tree brings forth good fruit, but a corrupt tree brings forth evil fruit. A good tree cannot bring forth evil fruit, neither can a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit. Every tree that brings not forth good fruit is hewn down and cast into the fire. Wherefore, by their fruits you shall know them. Not everyone that says unto me, 'Lord, Lord,' shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father which is in heaven." He tells us here that we need to be paying attention to the fruits of those around us, and that we will know these different ones by their fruits. And just because they may be voicing the words, "Lord, Lord," and they may be saying those things that sound good, We need to realize what the Lord's standard here is not the ones that come to Him on Judgment Day that are saying, Lord, Lord, is that going to be their automatic pass into being with Him for eternity? You know, that's not the case, is it? He says the ones that are going to enter the kingdom of heaven for eternity are those that are actually doing the will of God. They're bearing that fruit that comes as a result of keeping God's commandments. And we can look at people and we can see whether they're bearing that kind of fruit. And we need to be doing that. And especially, all of us need to be doing that, but especially, this is such a common temptation for the younger unmarried folks to fall to that trap of meeting someone that you like and letting your emotions take charge and not regarding what their positions are and what their beliefs are concerning the will of God. And even when they are religious, in some sense, there's that temptation to sort of say, well, they believe in God and they're good people. We need to look very, very closely at their fruits and ask the questions and understand, are they really believing what the Lord says? Are they really following what the Scriptures say? Or is this like so many of the religious folks in the world who with their mouths say one thing, but with their actions, with their fruits, they're saying something else? So we need to be thinking about this ahead of time before we get into those situations. It's very, very difficult if we haven't considered this ahead of time and prepared ourselves to say, I know this could come. I know that I could end up being in a situation where there's a temptation to be joined together with someone here that I have a great like for. We need to consider ahead of time, what's going to be my standard when that happens? Am I going to look at them because of their appearance and because of what the way that they talk and our relationship at a personal level? Or am I going to use the standard that the Lord uses and make sure that I'm not going to be joined together with an unbeliever? It will destroy us spiritually if we do so. There have been so many that have fallen into that trap and gone down that path. And we see even righteous ones such as Jehoshaphat making mistakes that ultimately led their children to not be righteous and not be considered righteous before the Lord. So despite the fact that Jehoshaphat himself was able to continue to serve the Lord and do the Lord's will, he made some choices in his life to allow some things to happen that had devastating effects on his family. And we need to be aware that those kinds of things can and do happen all of the time, and that we need to be looking out for those things and prepared for those kinds of situations. And so when we come back now to 2 Kings chapter 3, we see that he has agreed to go with Jehoram. In verse 8, it says, "And which way shall we go?" And he answered, "The way through the wilderness of Edom." So the king of Israel went, and the king of Judah, and the king of Edom, and they fetched a compass of 7 days' journey. And there was no water for the host and for the cattle that followed them. And the king of Israel said, "Alas, that the Lord has called these three kings together to deliver them into the hand of Moab." But Jehoshaphat said, "Is there not here a prophet of the Lord that we may inquire of the Lord by him?" And one of the king of Israel's servants answered and said, "Here is Elisha, the son of Shaphat, which poured water on the hands of Elijah." This also sounds familiar, doesn't it? Remember when they were going up to battle against Ramoth-Gilead, and they were concerned that they might lose that battle, and so they decided they need to find someone to inquire of the Lord, and they ultimately found Micaiah. Now, of course, Micaiah told them that they weren't going to be successful in their venture, but they proceeded anyway. Here we see, again, they proceed to go to the land of Moab, to go against the king of Moab. What does it look like they forgot to do here before they began those steps to do that? Well, we see here that they, after they get into the situation where it looks like there's no water for the host and for the cattle that are with them, that at that point they decide that they need to inquire of the Lord. And again, it's another lesson for us to remember we need to be inquiring of the Lord before it ever comes along. We need to be praying that the Lord would deliver us from these situations that could be a trap for us, and that if we are in a situation where we're considering being joined together with them in some way, we need to be praying about that before that ever begins the first step. And we need to be looking at what does the Lord want in these situations, and what is the Lord's standard, and what am I going to do to make sure that I'm following His way and not using my own judgment in these things. We need to consider the impact of some of these things that Jehoshaphat did. In 2 Chronicles 21, we'll begin reading in verse 21 here. It says, "Now Jehoshaphat slept with his fathers and was buried with his fathers in the city of David, and Jehoram, his son, reigned in his stead." So at this point now, Jehoshaphat is gone, and it's his son who takes over. In verse 2, it says, "He had brethren, the sons of Jehoshaphat, Azariah and Jehiel and Zechariah and Azariah and Michael and Shephatiah. All these were the sons of Jehoshaphat, king of Israel. And their father gave them great gifts of silver and of gold and of precious things with fenced cities in Judah. But the kingdom he gave to Jehoram because he was the firstborn. Now when Jehoram was risen up to the kingdom of his father, he strengthened himself and slew all his brethren with a sword, and diverse also of the princes of Israel. Jehoram was 32 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 8 years in Jerusalem. And he walked in the way of the kings of Israel, like as did the house of Ahab, for he had the daughter of Ahab to wife, and he wrought that which was evil in the eyes of the Lord." So we see now Jehoram, the son of Jehoshaphat, coming into power. He's 32 years old when he begins, and what is one of the very first things that he does when he comes to power? He kills his own brothers. He's concerned about maintaining that power that he has, and he literally kills his brethren with a sword, as it says there in verse 4. And apparently there were some princes of Israel as well that he was concerned about, so he killed them as well. Verse 6 describes the kind of person that Jehoram was. It says, "He walked in the way of the kings of Israel, like as did the house of Ahab." So he walked just like those kings of Israel. And why would that be? Well, the Lord makes it very clear here what was behind this. He says, "For he had the daughter of Ahab to wife." So that affinity that we read about and studied about in that first lesson where Jehoshaphat joined himself together with the house of Ahab, that was a mistake, a grave mistake on Jehoshaphat's part. It was something that was wrong of Jehoshaphat to have done. But we also see that the consequences weren't just limited to Jehoshaphat, were they? We see here that what is the result that's happening here? Well, after Jehoshaphat died, we see that all of Jehoshaphat's sons were killed by this wicked man who had married Athaliah, this daughter of Ahab. It was because of her that that influence that was there, and again, that marriage, there's really no greater way to be yoked together with someone in the world than through marriage. And here was this very, very wicked woman who was the daughter of Ahab that he had joined himself together with. And we can see her influence here coming through Jehoram and the things that he is doing. So we need to consider the consequences of the actions that we take and how those consequences can go for many, many generations. 2 Chronicles chapter 21, we're getting close to the end here. Verse 12, it says, "There came to a writing to him from Elijah the prophet, saying, Thus saith the Lord God of David thy father, because thou hast not walked in the ways of Jehoshaphat thy father, nor in the ways of Asa king of Judah, but hast walked in the way of the kings of Israel, and hast made Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem to go a whoring like to the whoredoms of the house of Ahab, and hast also slain thy brethren of thy father's house, which were better than thyself. Behold, with a great plague, will the Lord smite thy people and thy children and thy wives and all thy goods. So we see here that the Lord cursed Jehoram because of the things that he had done. And notice the Lord says through Elijah here that these ones that he had killed were better than himself, and that he had killed them because of this influence of his wicked wife Athaliah. What about, was that the end of the consequences that they paid here? Well, we see if we look a little bit further in chapter 22 and verse 1 that Jehoshaphat's grandson now, Ahaziah, takes over from Jehoram. We'll read a few verses here at the beginning of the chapter. It says, "And the inhabitants of Jerusalem made Ahaziah, his youngest son, king in his stead. For the band of men that came with the Arabians to the camp had slain all the eldest. So Ahaziah, the son of Jehoram, king of Judah, reigned. 42 years old was Ahaziah when he began to reign, and he reigned 1 year in Jerusalem. His mother's name also was Athaliah, the daughter of Omri. He also walked in the ways of the house of Ahab, for his mother was his counselor to do wickedly. Wherefore he did evil in the sight of the Lord, like the house of Ahab, for they were his counselors after the death of his father to his destruction. He walked also after their counsel and went with Jehoram, the son of Ahab, king of Israel, to war against Hazael, king of Syria, at Ramoth-Gilead. And the Syrians smote Joram." So we see here that the unfortunate consequences that were set off by that decision that Jehoshaphat made, they continue now to that next generation, the generation of his grandson, Ahaziah. And once again, we see the scriptures reminding us that, well, what was behind Ahaziah's problem? It was the fact that who was his mother? It was Athaliah. And it points that out in verse 2 there. And so in verse 3, it says his mother was his counselor to do wickedly. So that initial joining together in marriage, that evil influence of being joined together with an unbeliever, that leaven that was there in that relationship, that leaven spread to many, many different places within that family and caused great destruction, spiritual destruction within that family. And so we need to consider the consequences then of being joined together with these unbelievers and the very great destruction that that can bring about, not only to us, but to the generations after us. And we need to seriously consider these kinds of consequences. We're going to go back to 2 Corinthians now to again remind ourselves of what the Lord tells us we need to do here, or not to do. He says in verse 14, "Be not unequally yoked together with unbelievers." We've seen several examples here in this account of Jehoshaphat and his son Jehoram and then Ahaziah, and how this bad decision of being unequally yoked together with these evil unbelievers of the house of Ahab, how it had consequences for Jehoshaphat. We saw how that many of his works were destroyed, and then we saw how his children were destroyed because of those decisions that he had made to be joined together with these unbelievers. So it's a very, very serious thing for us to consider. And again, it's so common and so easy for us to fall to that trap because we're surrounded by these unbelievers. And that makes it all the more important for us to continue to come together and to be together with one another, to be joined together with each other as God's children in working to fulfill His purpose and His will. And so tonight we're getting ready to sing here in just a minute, Lord willing, and we want all who are here to consider that what he wants us to do, that he wants us to come out from this world, and he wants us to begin to follow Jesus, to begin to follow that one way that leads to the Father, to not be joined together with these influences in this world, but to be joined together with our brothers and sisters in Christ in working together to fulfill God's will for us. And so if you're subject to the Lord's invitation tonight to begin that process of going down that path and living for Him. We want you to consider that invitation that He sends to all of us. If you need the prayers of the congregation for any reason, we ask that you would come forward and make that known as we stand and sing tonight.